Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to a very special edition of the Post Wrestling Cafe. Once again, I am your host, Karen Peterson, and joined with me, as always, is our Canadian queen of Collision Course in the North, Kate from Montreal. We were kind of joking before we got started that we kind of get like the sad topics, that we're kind of the sad girls club here at Post Wrestling. But today we've come together for the first time, gosh, in about 2 months, because like we last talked in March. This time we're getting together to talk about the Dark Side of the Ring episode, about the Scream Queen herself, Daphne. And Kate, how you been?
I've been okay. As I was saying, I'm in weather hell right now because it got very, very warm last week in Montreal, and now it's just gotten unseasonably cold. Like, it's not cold in Canadian standards, but I'm doing this entire show with sort of a chill in my bones.
Oh, no.
Because I live in an apartment building and the heat for the building was centrally shut off because, hey, it's like halfway through May. No one needs the heat anymore. And especially with last week, we're all begging for the air conditioning. So yes, now I feel appropriately gloomy going into this show.
Meanwhile, I'm miserable with the heat wave that's hitting Florida because we're getting our like July/August miserable like high 90s, which is like mid to high 30s Celsius weather now before hurricane season starts on June 1st. So it's I'm a different kind of miserable. It's the sweaty human miserable as opposed to the freezing cold miserable. But it's just really good to catch up with you finally. Cause like, you know, we keep joking that we only get together once in a blue moon, but it's 2 months have gone by and I can't believe it's gone by so quickly.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, we have developed a theme. This has become our thing now. It's like, we just get together and talk about TV or movies. I like this.
I'm glad that John and Wei have trusted us with this like fun little like side project. We don't know where it's going to go from here or when we're going to get together next, but hey, we're having a good time.
There's going to be something.
There's going to be something, hopefully. But yeah, so we are going to discuss Vice's season 6, episode 9 of Dark Side of the Ring, which is focused on Daphne. Now, before we get started, guys, of course, as always, we got our disclaimers and our trigger warnings. In this review of Dark Side of the Ring, like our previous one on Luna Vachon, we will be discussing mental health, bipolarism, medication, suicide, as well as more timely topics for the modern day, including internet bullying, aging, body image, concussions, and CTE. The discussion we have is our own thoughts. It is neither medical nor legal advice. So it's purely for commentary purposes on this particular episode. Also, if you are in need of assistance, please reach out to your local counseling or support services. All right. So, immediate reaction after watching. What did you think?
I could sort of divide my brain in two parts. The first is that this was up there with the highest quality, the Dark Side of the Ring episodes. But like the best Dark Side of the Ring episodes, it was difficult to watch. Like, yes. Whereas the one about Jake the Snake Roberts and his family history, or the one about the plane ride from hell, like, those are, to me, just extremely strong episodes of this show. And this was on a level with that. But like those episodes, you didn't feel good at the end of it. And so I'm not generally... I'm not usually shaken by a lot of this stuff, but this one got to me, and it was very difficult not to compare it to the episode that they did on Luna Vachon, which we discussed when we were talking about the documentary that was made about her and where the Dark Side episode might have fallen short. And we were discussing earlier, I think that they went some way to redressing some of the problems that they had with that episode and dealing with, unfortunately, a similar kind of story.
Yeah. It was one of those things where we were talking off air, was that when John first approached me with the opportunity to cover this episode, my gut reaction was, God, I hope they've learned their lesson from when they did the Luna episode in 2021. Because I remember, like, we talked about it a couple of months ago, it was like, I watched and I was angry because I felt like they didn't do her legacy any justice. Spoiler alert, we're going to get into it, but this episode handled Daphne Shannon. I'm going to call her Shannon. It makes it, because I feel like it's more about Shannon the person as opposed to Daphne the wrestler. They handled her legacy and her situation with discretion and dignity that I feel like some of the other previous episodes that they've done with similar topics that they didn't necessarily do the right way. I feel like it was a step in the right direction if that's what they're going to do when covering the passing of someone, especially if it's due to either suicide or other, you know, very difficult topics. I felt like they were able to share her story, but do it in a very dignified manner, which, you know, seeing about a week ago prior to the release of this episode, there was discussion on social media. You know, Jamie Senegal came out with a comment about she was offered the opportunity to be interviewed and she declined it because, you know, for her, Shannon was like a mother figure to her. She called her mother. She was the daughter. It's a very emotional situation for her. And then same thing with Allison Kay, who was like, it's only been 4 years. And, you know, some people are still processing their grief. They're still managing their grief. They're still trying to understand and, you know, dealing with that survivor's guilt. So it's one of those things where I saw those two reactions and my stomach just dropped. And I'm like, I hope beyond hope that the approach to this episode would honor the legacy. And I think seeing that, you know, that they, how they handled and how they just talked to the family and her peers and those around her, I feel like it gave a more fair, what I would say, a more fair assessment of her situation and a more like a gentler explanation of her situation.
This definitely felt more personal, and not that they spoke to, again, comparing it to the Luna episode, like they spoke to her family, but this seemed like the family had much more of a role in directing the narrative. Now, whether that was because they were consulted about the structure of the episode, or simply their interviews made for a really good explanation of her story, I don't know. But this felt a lot less like someone coming in to tell a wrestler's story from an outsider, from a journalistic perspective, and more like someone wanting to tell the story of someone they cared about.
Yeah. When we were talking about, you know, the Luna documentary, we like, before we even got started, like there was, we saw a lot of comparisons on in this particular episode, how there was more of an approach to how Kate Kroll did her documentary on Luna, where it was more, you had her close circle of friends who helped her through different stages of her life, but also someone to talk about struggling with bipolar disorder, someone who like is a wrestler and also a first responder. And I feel like those, the choosing of someone like Amanda Rodriguez, who is a wrestler, a friend, you know, part of Shannon's inner circle, who also, you know, struggles with this particular, like it's surprising how like nowadays, how common, how we always were led to believe that it was a very rare situation, but it's becoming more and more like there's a heightened awareness of how frequent and common it can be.
I think it's because for a long time, bipolar disorder, I guess like manic depression as it was known, was thought of simply in what's now called bipolar type 1, which is full on where the manias are extreme enough usually to cause a psychotic break.
Yeah.
And that is like, that is when you think of someone just like fully outside of reality, unable, you know, like coming up with insane conspiracy theories or like not eating or washing for ages. Like that's the sort of similar to like paranoid schizophrenia. That's a form of bipolar disorder. I think what, people have discovered is that the same sorts of abnormalities in brain chemistry can manifest in ways that are not as obvious, but that it's the same type of condition, and that what is was often blown off as just moodiness or like bad temper or being sort of inconsistent, like that in itself can be indicative of bipolar disorder. And like, you know, have different forms of bipolar that have been identified. Like it's kind of, it's remarkable, like even like within my lifetime, the changes that have occurred in the definition of all mental disorders and bipolar in particular. But also watching this, what struck me is, and we'll get into this when we're talking about like how her bipolar was treated, the even during the time that she was alive, the treatments that were available to her and that she could have used were in themselves evolved.
It's really the placement of this particular episode within the like the semi-annual or annual release of the Dark Side of the Ring series is very interesting to me, because one, we're talking about concussions and brain injuries and stuff like that. We're talking about suicide awareness. We're talking about mental health. And the last time you and I talked was in March, which was, interestingly enough, Brain Injury Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. We're currently in May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Health Awareness Month.
And unfortunately, when Shannon passes away, it's right before World Suicide Prevention Day in September. So yeah. It's one of those things where, and then also this coming Friday is the annual Hana Kimura Memorial Show. So it's one of those things where this is a very timely episode. And I wonder, I mean, I don't know what the people at Vice were thinking when they decided to include this one in the lineup, but I'm wondering if the placement is somewhat intentional because of the
discussion. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. Like, I think it's a sort of thing that you do notice, and you have a chance to order this the way that you want. I don't think it's an accident, at least whether or not they would be able to plan it to be so close to the Hana Kimura show is one thing, but during Mental Health Awareness Month, I'm sure that they had that in mind.
All right. So with the breakdown of the actual episode, of course, Chris Jericho is back narrating as he always does. And again, when I first heard his voice and I was like, oh no, are they going, it kind of gave me the hint that they're going one way with it, but I was pleasantly surprised by the end of it. In this episode, two of Shannon's family members are interviewed, her brother, Darren, and her father, Quentin. When it comes to the female peers that are interviewed, Lexi Fife, who's her best friend, she gives probably the fullest picture of the timeline of Shannon's career and unfortunately helps corroborate the timeline of events of the day of her passing. Amanda Rodriguez, the Queen of the Ring one, this time she's the one who openly discusses being a wrestler, struggling with bipolarism, and it's handled very well. And she gives a lot of, for someone who wants to learn more about it, she explains the situation, especially when it correlates to concussions, how the medications can get affected and how it, but she makes it in a very, explains it in a very accessible way, I think. Yeah. And then for those who are familiar with Taylor Wilde, her government name is Chantel Malawoski. I didn't know that she's been a firefighter for 10 years. So when she mentioned that in the story, she's like, I could tell when she was in crisis. And I wish that that particular part of it was mentioned earlier in the story, because for those who aren't familiar with Taylor Wilde, or very, except for me, I'll admit I watched the Monday Night Wars, but WCW was not my normal watching, because much like WWE at the time, because of how they treated their women better, but not much better. And then TNA, I could never time it to watch TNA. Admittedly didn't watch much of Daphne, wasn't very familiar with her, but I didn't know that she's kind of like the template of, as explained in the show, the crazy goth girl, which is kind of like between Luna and predating Paige. Like, she's the one
right
from that era in the middle. Like, she's the, like, and then right, I guess before Paige was AJ Lee. So like, that's like the progression in the situation.
The sort of the non-blondes, as I think of them,
the brunettes, as it were. And then for the wrestlers that were included outside of Jericho, probably the most notable would be Mick Foley, and followed by Crowbar or Chris Ford, who was in WCW tagging with David Flair, who she was their valet for a while, and then Caleb Conley, who was her ex-boyfriend for 4 years. And again, the stories that they tell, again, they tell stories about Shannon that are important, but also they're done in a way where they honor her memory. And I felt like that was very crucial, because I feel like it's easy to get caught up in the details, but a focus I noticed in this particular version of Dark Side was that they were talking about the person before the wrestler. They were talking about they were putting Shannon before Daphne, if that makes any sense. Person versus who she was. She was more of the forefront as opposed to her namesake.
Yeah. They presented enough that you knew who the character was, but what I think that they did very well was talk about her as a person, but also how the person informed that character, elements of her personality were in the character of Daphne. The sort of wildness, that was part of her, that was part of her mental health, that was part of her mental makeup.
I'm trying not to get sad about it, because I watched the episode twice and I'm just like, oh, this is, it's such a good story, but it's also such a sad story, because again, it's one of those things where they, like, even her father says it, it's like, we could give her all the help in the world, but if she wasn't in the right mindset to take that help, there was nothing we could do. And yeah. I feel like she had a very good support system, but it's one of those things where if you're struggling, like, even if that support system's in place, if you're not in the right headspace for it, it's very easy to not overlook it, but not, for me, I'm a perpetual people pleaser. So I have a tough time asking people for help. And it's one of those things where it's like, I can understand her particular situation, but I can understand how difficult it can be to reach out when I'm at my limit.
And also, I think part of the problem is that when you're in a mental crisis, you don't always know what you're asking for. Like, you just know that something is bad. And the scary thing with bipolar disorder in particular is how quickly that can escalate. Like, it's like you can be triggered by the most mundane thing and can spiral really quickly. And unfortunately, it does look like that is what happened in the few hours that led to her suicide, where it just went, it goes from some sort of, obviously some little thing kind of tripped her up, but that it escalates so quickly, and it can become so difficult to kind of talk someone down, to get them to sort of speak about what it is they need, and like get them out of this sort of rapid cycling of just nothing, everything is doomed, there's nothing that can be done. Everything is terrible. It's only going to get worse. And that sort of it, you get caught up in it. Like, I think it's like having sort of a rock in your shoe, and it gets there, it starts to irritate you, but then it can, like, there's nothing you can do. It's just there, and it's starting to hurt, and it's getting worse and worse. And if you can't get it out, it's like your system is speeding up. Like, you're reacting to the fact that something is upsetting you, and you can't get it out of your head. And unfortunately, that can get out of control very quickly with someone with bipolar disorder.
I think it was also interesting because, from, you know, one of the things that they talk about most in this is trying to find the right combination of medication, because, of course, you know, you can be on whatever medications are available to you. But again, it's not a one size fits all sort of solution. Your body will react differently to a medication than my body would react. And it's trying to find the right combination of that, but also having the wherewithal while on that medication to be able to ask for help. But the problem is that, from the way they describe it, is that it dulls you down so much that you feel like you're not in control of your own body, right? So
I think the thing with antidepressants, certainly, and you have to look at when she was diagnosed. Originally, which was quite, from what the timeline that they were giving, like, she was diagnosed at a fairly young age, like in the early 2000s. And she was on medication, at least on and off, for the rest of her life. So when you're talking about drugs that were available, like, there are antidepressants which have the tendency, particularly the earlier versions that were available then, to cause that sort of anhedonia, where you just don't feel anything. You're unmotivated. It can cause fluctuations in weight. But what's really, what she probably really would have had issues with was the two drugs that would have been prescribed for bipolar at the time would likely have been either lithium or valproic acid. Both of those, they are powerful drugs, and they can curb manias, which is the most dangerous thing for someone with bipolar disorder. They're far more likely to hurt themselves or others when they're in a manic state than when they're in a depressive state. So these two drugs have a strong effect on curbing mania, but they have a horrible, horrible range of side effects. Like, this is not, when they're talking about, like, she didn't want to take the drugs because she didn't like the effects they were having on her, and they, like, you need to understand, like, massive weight gain can be a problem. They mention this in particular in the, episode, but like you can, it can trigger allergies that you didn't know to have. And they can cause hair loss. They can cause skin conditions. They could cause like, these are very difficult drugs to handle. Yeah. And it's basically like, either you're going to keep your symptoms in check, or you are going to, you're going to have to deal with these side effects, or you're going to feel like your brain is beyond your control.
Yeah.
Now, as time went on, like there were like new drugs that were developed that would have been less harsh on her. They all have side effects, yeah. But I was just thinking early on when she was diagnosed, the drugs that she would have been on were, they're not easy to handle.
They're the more aggressive type when it comes to side effects.
Exactly.
And I think that, like, you know, you just mentioned, and they did touch upon the episode, was the weight gain and hyperthyroidism and other things that, you know, are very difficult, or, you know, her also going through menopause. It's the, like, wrestling is a very cosmetic business. Mm-hmm. And with the internet, which is the different layer to Shannon's story versus Luna's story, was that people on the internet had to say what they wanted. They wanted to be a keyboard warrior, and they wanted to say what they were feeling at the time about her appearance. And if we've learned nothing, because this is also very relevant to Hana Kimura, is that maybe sometimes it's the whole, does this need to be said? Does this need to be said by me? Does this need to be said by me right now? If the answer is no to any of those three, don't say it.
Yeah.
Even if you're comfortable behind your little keyboard, don't say it, because you never know if the keystrokes you make is going to be that last straw to tip somebody over.
And I noticed a few weeks ago that Suzu Suzuki from Stardom had like a similar rash of people commenting that she had gained weight and suggesting that she go on Ozempic. And it's disturbing how frequently that is a target, and how frequently it's a target for women. And they did. It's one of the things that that Taylor Wilde brings up in her commentary. She says, you know, that there's always the problem with wrestling is there's always going to be someone younger and faster and better looking, and that the better looking is particularly a concern for women. Younger and faster and stronger, that's a concern for men. Like that's for both of them. But the fact that, you know, better looking is always an issue for women. Yep. And I think obviously with the character of Daphne, where she was already presenting as sort of an outside the norm in terms of her looks, like there would have been that much more pressure on her to be like to conform to the ideal in other ways.
Yeah, because I even seeing the clips and remembering what I knew of WCW at the time, I was like, oh, Stacy Keibler and her like 80 inch legs, and I was just like, oh. Yeah, she had to deal with that and Tori Wilson at the time. So it was one of those things where it was just like, I'm glad that at that point in our lives there was no social media, because I don't think I would be where I am today had it been that way. Because it was even then, I remember as somebody who was offline, and we didn't have like internet, or I wasn't in any internet communities at 19. But it was one of those things where it's like, I feel like I still, so from the time I was 16, struggled with body image and, you know, eating disorders and trying to be comfortable in my own skin with, you know, now starting to go through perimenopause. It's like, I like a lot of what they were talking about with regards to Shannon's changing body as a result of her medication and aging and getting older. For me, it was very like, not reassuring, but I could completely understand, because I'm struggling with those particular situations as well. And I don't think it's one of those things where it's given a lot of presentation outside of like female circles, as it were, because that tends to be the lesser discussed topics that we should have, like the magic cure all to be, you know, would I love to be 5'6" and 120 pounds soaking wet? Yes, but I also look anorexic at that weight.
And I think that, yeah, for, again, like you, I'm happy that I grew up without the added factor of the internet, because I feel like I was already, you know, that's about, like, I already had the most that I could handle in terms of body image, like, in terms of body image problems. And a lot of that, and it isn't even just, you know, if people make comments about you, it's just the constant messaging. And for women in wrestling, I find that it's like your body is the way you make money, but it's also kind of your enemy. Like, yeah, you are always having to fight to stay in shape, to deal with pain, to be attractive, to, like, and then add, like, to deal with, you know, like, remaining, like, thin and muscular enough, but not too muscular, and then as
or
you
having
get older,
having a kid, and, like, yeah, having to exactly spring back in 6 months, yeah, or less,
like getting back into shape, making sure, you know, dealing with, like, having a child can change the shape of your body permanently. Yeah. And then as you get older, like, dealing with the hormones and change, like, the changes that come with that. And specifically, they were mentioning with Daphne that, you know, she started, you know, perimenopause started to kick in, and that caused her meds to stop working, yeah, which is, like, which is not an unknown thing. Yeah. But yeah, it's one more complication. And yeah, it does feel like she was between the pressure to look good, the injuries that she sustained, and then the different hormonal fluctuations that came from medications and then from menopause. Like, yeah, she was in this lifelong battle with her own body.
Yeah. And it was when Mick Foley came on and talked about the Bound for Glory 2009, a Monster Ball match against him and Abyss, where mm-hmm. she agrees to do the table spot. And then in his next breath, he's like, if I could take it all back, I would. Because yeah, that was, I felt so bad for Mick, because Mick seems to be the guy that, like, he cares so much about everyone who wants to do a hardcore match. And he wants mm-hmm. to tell everyone that, we'll protect you, it'll be fine. And then when it's not fine, I feel like he puts the guilt upon himself, and it's like, accidents happen. And it's the, for those who follow the TNA YouTube channel, that if you have the stomach for it, that entire pay-per-view is available and you can watch the match. When they said that she hit her head went through the table, hit her head on the floor, broke her arm, I was like, nope, I'm good. I don't, what the clips they showed me was mm-hmm. sufficient. But interestingly enough, it was, you know, this is where the conversation about not just her mental health, but also her physical health in regards to her brain health, and because it starts to become like a domino effect, because no sooner do they get her to the back, she has no recollection of what happened. She's concussed. They put her in an ambulance. You see her arm casted up. Mick apparently rides in the ambulance with her to the hospital. And then comes the situation where it becomes unwinnable for her, because she's a wrestler who can't wrestle, who's advised mm-hmm. not to wrestle, but she wants to wrestle. It's trying to define who you are when you're not in the ring. And that, compounded with her own mental health struggles, she fights her way back against doctor's wishes. Then there's the conversation of medically cleared versus medically cleared. And apparently, there's also, she and Taylor Wilde also had the first ever knockouts Monster Ball match. It was a 3-minute match, but they had one. So it's one of those things where it's they're trying to help accommodate her desire to wrestle. But unfortunately, once TNA, you know, gets acquired and disappears, or WCW gets acquired and disappears, it's her body, she wants, her in her mind, she wants to do the job, but now it's her body's breaking down. Her own brain is saying, maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. And I'm glad she was able to find places like Shimmer where she could wrestle other women and showcase other women, or work with Shine, even though Shine has a very questionable reputation down in Tampa. she was able to find ways to give back to wrestling for future generations, which I thought was great, but it still makes me so sad that it's one of those things where I understand having a love for something, but not your body not being able to love you back in the sense that you can't continue to do what you love.
Yeah. And that does seem to be a theme. Like this is one area where her life very much parallels Luna's, which is that she was married to this idea of wrestling. You hear her say it in an interview that is excerpted in the Dark Side episode, which is that it combined the two things she loves, athleticism and acting. Yeah. And I hadn't actually realized until I watched this episode what an accomplished child she was. She'd won athletic championships. She had been in movies. She had being in wrestling. It's not joking. It was combining two areas where at a very young age she had established herself. But you get in a position where you love something that doesn't love you back. And yep. She, I think particularly at the time, this has gotten better. There are still issues with it, but employers just weren't taking care of their employees in the way, well, they're still not admitting their employees, but we'll get to that in a moment. And so you very much were on your own. And so having head trauma is already a very challenging thing to treat because it's very difficult to determine the effect of the full effect of an injury, but also whether the extent to which you've progressed in your healing.
That was one of the things that I'm glad that they kind of discussed it, because again it parallels what we were talking about last time with the independent contractor versus contracted employee. If you're working a show for a corporation, you get injured in the ring, my personal take, not legal advice, they should be paying it. The company should be paying it. You're not an independent contractor if you are contracted to a company. But that's just me. For the last time we talked, I brought up Pat LaPrade's book, The Sisterhood of the Squared Circle. And I'm going to bring it up again because they have two pages on Daphne. Or keep in mind that this book was written in 2017, so well before the pandemic, which was another large contributing factor to the struggles that Daphne was having at the time, was that she, like we were talking about head injuries and wrestling not being, loving something that can't love you back because of your body breaking down. And she had this one great piece of advice where she says, anytime I hear a girl hit her head, I'd say, cancel your next freaking booking. You rest. No working out, just light walking and stretching, but no physical exertion where the blood is going to rush to your brain. Now, for someone who is on a medication that, helps regulate your brain, I love that she actually clearly says, not just, you might make something worse. She clearly says that, if you're dealing with a concussion, this is something you need to be very aware of. And she says, because it's dangerous. I definitely did things in my career I wish I could have had the balls to say no to. I went through barbed wire and thumbtacks and tables, but it takes more balls to say no. Your health is important. And I feel like that's become more of a conversation within wrestling when we talk about unprotected chair shots or going a little too far in the hardcore matches, is that as science has progressed, it's getting to the point where, even now you can't predict what's going to happen with the brain. And you can't really do any analysis on a brain until someone has unfortunately passed away and donated their brain to science. Growing up as a kid, it was kind of like, you talk about, Halloween and Dr. Frankenstein and, donating a brain to science. And you'd be like, who actually does that? Now as an adult, it's like, no, people actually do it. And it's one of those things where with her, I believe they said in the episode that she was the first women's brain to be studied for CTE at Boston University's CTE Center, which I thought was I'm glad early on in her career she had made that decision that she wanted to give back to the sport in a way that you can't normally do. She thought far enough in advance that when her time came, that she wanted to be able to, you know, donate her organs, essentially. And for me, like, again, I'm not, I know the basics of CT. I'm not very well versed in it, but, you know, I did go to Boston University CTE website and see what their blurb is about, you know, what they study. And for those who aren't familiar, it says Boston University's chronic traumatic encephalopathy, I think I got it that time, center conducts high impact innovative research on chronic traumatic, I'm not going to say it again because I'm going to get it wrong, and other long-term consequences of repeated brain trauma in athletes. Because like for me in Florida, the conversation tends to be more against, or not against, but involving high school football players, American football players, not soccer players, and the impact on their brains. But I love that this particular agency goes so far as to talk about the repetitive brain trauma in athletes, military personnel, first responders, victims of physical violence, and others affected by head trauma. So it provides a large scope that maybe not the lay person will think of, because, you know, primarily we associate him like the general person is with it's sports injuries related to like football or boxing or, you know, MMA, where people are constantly getting hit in the head with things. But, you know, in recent years, or even, you know, going back 10, 15 years, there's been the conversation of wrestling's involvement with concussions and, you know, something like with agencies developing concussion protocols to help protect the wrestlers and, you know, the, taking the steps from a medical side to ensure that the wrestler is safe to return, or if they're not, providing them avenues to navigate that situation afterwards.
And it is sort of it is surprising that she's like the first female wrestler in a way to be analyzed. But it's kind of the sad thing is that that really shouldn't be surprising, because one of the reasons why women struggle in getting medical diagnoses at all is that traditionally, a lot of medical research has been done exclusively on men.
On men.
And that women were seen as men but smaller. Yeah. And what has come out over time is that no, women's bodies are actually
wired
very, very differently.
The
differences in hormones, the differences in growth patterns, the differences in bone density, the differences in muscle density, these all play into the picture of overall health. And like, speaking about mental health, like there's only now starting to be solid research on the fact that ADHD is tremendously underdiagnosed in women, because it is associated with a certain pattern of behavior that tends to be prevalent among young men and boys, whereas the same sorts of unhelpful brain patterns exist in women. They just don't manifest that way. So, one of these things that bless her for signing up to be part of this program. It's tremendously sad that it ended up happening at such a young age.
Yeah. It was as the episode winds down, they recount the final morning or the final day of. Mm-hmm. And it's told from multiple perspectives, her brother, her friends, and her father. And it starts off with, when I talked to her that morning, everything seemed fine. And I'm like, oh no. And again, it was you spoke earlier about it, you know, it going from like 0 to 60 real quick. And when you start spiraling, there's no way to pull yourself back. And it's when they're, you know, she talks about, her friends talk about her going on to Instagram Live. Again, for those who a year prior went through everything with Hana Kimura, it was the same thing. There was an Instagram Live. It was very confusing. It was people like, you know, peers and friends were trying to get a hold of her in real time, trying to see if she's okay, trying to get her to stop what she's doing, trying to contact somebody, anybody to, you know, go to her house and do a wellness check. And it's just, again, it's overwhelming, but I feel like the way that it was told was done tactfully. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, there is no delicate way to skirt around the issue of how she chose to end her life. And I went onto YouTube I'm glad that people who have tried to repost the video that, because there have been people who have tried to repost the video of her last Instagram live. And if you're one of those people, you should be ashamed, because there's a reason why it was taken down. And there's a reason why people are still grieving about it. And if you consider yourself, and this is where I'm going on my soapbox, if you consider yourself a fan, that's the kind of content you don't repost. You don't try to share it under the name of journalism or what have you, because you're not contributing anything constructive, especially after the fact. And I feel like the show discussed the timeline in a way that, like, you know, people were concerned about honoring the legacy. It was done tastefully, if you can say it tastefully. Like, it didn't leave the same sour taste in the mouth the way that the Luna Vachon episode did, if that makes any sense.
I think the thing about, and I'm very glad that they dedicated as much time as they did to recounting this final day in her life, because as you're saying, this is something that seemed to come out of nowhere. And like I said, if you've dealt with bipolar disorder, if you've dealt with people who had that sort of mental illness, you know, like, it can be fine right up until the point when it's really, really not. And I think what struck me watching this was, you know how this ends. And just that, I think for me, I felt for the level of despair that she must have had, because I've been there. And when you get in that sort of position, it looks like there's no way out. But the other thing that I really felt for was just that sense of total powerlessness on behalf of the people who were trying to help her, where you're reaching out, you want to try and make things better, but she's just not responding.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the scary thing when this sort of thing can happen online. Like, if you are flipping out and you have someone who's like in the house with you, hopefully they are able to talk to you in a way that is going to make things better. If you are able to get on the phone with someone, they are able to talk to you. But this is what broke my heart, is like people seeing them talk about, like, message after message. It's like, you should not feel hopeless. You are loved. There are people who are pulling for you. There are people who, like, you're important to. And the sad thing is, when you're in that state, that kind of message just, it doesn't hit. Like, you're not hearing it, because when you get to that point, I think what you really need is someone to actually stay with you and say, like, okay, like, not as much as it's a natural reflex, not say, like, we love you, we're there for you. You shouldn't be this. You shouldn't be so depressed. You have no reason to want to take your own life. And, like, as much as those statements are very well meaning, when you have someone who's in that state, what you really need to do is talk to them directly. Like, get them calmed down. Let them express themselves. Like, rather than saying, like, no, you shouldn't feel like that. Yeah. Let them express their fears and validate that in a way. Yes. Okay. You have every right to be upset, and you are, and let's talk about this, get it out of your system. But when you have this interface of the internet, it's very difficult for that to happen. And the sad thing is, I think, like, seeing all of these messages of support and love probably did not matter a whole lot, because it can feel like, when people are saying that, either A, they don't mean it, or B, they're not getting why you're upset. And that horrible feeling of just helplessness on both sides, like, was the most difficult thing about this episode for me.
I finished watching it at lunch, and I had a good cry afterwards, because it was one of those things where it's like, no matter how well-intentioned you are, if you don't know what to say, or, you know, you want, you, like, sometimes, you know, you said, like, just the best thing to do is, like, genuinely, or not genuinely, but like interact with them and engage with them and get a hold of them. The most difficult part was hearing them all say her email box was full. She wasn't picking up her phone.
Her voicemail was full.
She was, you know, declining, you know, join requests were, you know, she was shutting everyone out because she was shutting down. And it was one of those things where it was the, I hope those involved understand that they did the best they could, because again, it's the survivor's guilt that they're all contending with right now. It's like, why wasn't I fast enough? Why couldn't I respond quick enough? Why couldn't the police get there fast enough? And it's kind of trying to find the way to be forgiving to oneself, where we had the discussion last time about a person being in pain, and as sad it is they're not around anymore, to that person, maybe at that time, this was the only logical solution to them that they could come up with. And I think trying to reconcile that can be very difficult.
What, this sounds horrible, but unfortunately, I think when, and these are all the, you know, the people they interview there, they're all obviously questioning, like, what if I could have gotten through? What if I could have gotten a hold of her? Could I have helped? And like I said, these things can, like, these sorts of manias, of panic attacks, can escalate so quickly. It's what I think one of the women mentioned this particularly with what can be a danger for bipolar people is what's called dysphoric manias, which is basically you are at once incredibly depressed but also super energetic, and those are very dangerous.
Yeah, Amanda Rodriguez, I believe, was the one that was talking about it.
Yeah, like it. That is a very threatening state to be in. And the thing that I hope that the people who wanted to help her realize is that when those things, when you get caught up in one of those things, sometimes you just cannot get through to someone fast enough. And that's tragic. I think, unfortunately, she had access to a particularly lethal form of suicide, which, like, compounds the problem even more. And yeah, it sounds horrible, but it, sometimes this is going to happen, and it's not it's not anyone's fault, and it's horrible, but like, there's no blame to be apportioned here.
Absolutely. And I did like that they wound the episode down with talking about, you know, her contribution to science, her focusing on an animal rescue, the working with Vicky Lyons, that one singles match with the girl who got unfortunately hit by a car, but, you know, Shannon wrestled, like, taught her how to wrestle, and then, like, let she did the job. She let the young kid pin her, which I was like, just, I was just sobbing. I'm like, this is why I love wrestling. Like, it was that kind of legacy that I love, that they focused on that part of it, is that she may no longer be amongst us, but I feel like if people can take anything away from this particular episode, is that it's, think about the legacy you want to live. Think about how you can watch out for other people, how you can be a good advocate, whether it's for mental health or for physical health, or, you know, work in this is where I guess, like, workers' rights is also included in there when it comes to independent contracting and making sure that people's, like, are taking, if people are injured or in need, that they're taken care of. And I feel like those are things that the wrestling community as a whole, they've gotten better about drawing attention to these situations, but I feel like we need to, as a whole, both you know, companies, wrestlers, fans, everybody together as a community, it needs to be, we shouldn't need a crisis or a massive loss like this to keep the conversation going. I feel like it needs to be how we need to, like, start focusing more on how we can continue to make the environment, the fandom, the environment, the workplace, all of it better, because I don't want to keep seeing losses like this. It makes me so sad and so angry. I know.
And it's unfortunately a thing where, and this is, we were talking earlier, and as I was saying, The one area where I would have liked to have seen them do a little bit more of a deep dive was in her lawsuit against TNA, where she attempted to prove that the wrestlers were not independent contractors. They were employees in all but name, and that therefore TNA should have been taking a greater role to protect their employees and taking a greater role to support their employees when they were injured. I think that, look, there's nothing that I would have taken out from this episode. So just saying I would like to have added another segment is, you know, I'm creating a problem without offering a solution. But I would say, like, if there was one thing that didn't sit right with me about the episode, it was the fact that her lawsuit against TNA, and also the fact that she was the developmental contract that she was given with WWE, which is never picked up, whereas a lot of those were. I found that the producers kind of gave a pass to the companies in this, and the people who were running it at the time, the people who were involved in the decisions to not continue her contract with WWE and to not offer her the support that she required from TNA. And as I said, it's 45 minutes of show. You do not have time to get into anything, but it didn't quite sit right with me that I think seeing these people who knew her personally kind of put themselves through a ringer and really sort of questioned their own complicity in the events that led to her death, for the sort of the corporations to remain faceless and beyond question seemed unfair to me. Like, that's where
I agree.
And the thing is that if she had been successful in her suit against TNA, that would have caused massive repercussions within the wrestling industry.
Yeah.
And these are things that are still not being dealt with. And there are people who are still not receiving the treatment that they need. There are people who are still, like, fighting to be recognized as employees, right? Like, this is a conversation that comes up every couple of years. And so, that was, I said, the one thing, they were very tight on time, but the fact that these just got glossed over so quickly.
I really wish they would have held their feet to the fire just a little bit. Like, if there had to be one edgy approach, I mean, I guess the closest we got was the mention of that instead of getting paid, compensated financially for her injury, she was given $1,000 or thousands of her merch to sell independently to help pay for her bills. And I'm like, I feel like that's not, like, it's a step in the right direction to be like, this is kind of the scummy part of how this was handled, but they could have gone just a little deeper.
So put a face to the scum. And this is the thing, like, you have all of these people who are close to her, who are willing to go on camera and speak, like, try to get someone from one of these companies to talk about their role in these parts of her life, because they had a far more negative contribution than these people who are beating themselves up for not being able to help her on the final day of her life.
Yeah, it's the, not that this all could have been prevented, but I feel like, just, you know, offhandedly mentioned, well, this is why the wellness program was developed, and why this is why the concussion protocol was developed. Yeah, those are results, but, you know, if you're not a dialed in fan of wrestling and you don't know the history and the lore and everything involved of the many workings of wrestling in the last 30 plus years, you may or may not know about Vince McMahon. And, you know, they put him on screen on the episode. They had in a clip of him showing up at WCW when after it was acquired. But it's the, I feel like they intentionally held back on that. And I don't know, like, and not that I don't know why, but I know why. And it burns my biscuits, because for as edgy as the Vice series tends to be, they could have towed the line a little closer on that one point.
Mm-hmm. And I think given how strong the rest of it was, it did sort of stand out that, okay, you know, you're, and as much as the others were willing to offer that, even if you, like, it would have been perfectly acceptable to say, we tried to get a comment from TNA about this. Yeah. We tried to get a comment from WWE about this, and they refused to speak to us. Like, that's standard journalistic practice, but at least the fact that they didn't say that they tried to get a statement makes me think that they didn't.
From either. Like, especially in recent news with TNA and WWE possibly now being linked together and working together.
Not even possibly. I mean, they're basically, like, TNA is basically branding themselves as NXTNA for live shows.
So any final thoughts?
I hope that they continue to do episodes of this caliber. I haven't kept up with the series as much in the last couple of seasons. This is made me think, like, okay, maybe I'll want to go back and look into it. I think that they clearly understood some of the criticisms that came out of the Luna episode, and that they learned from past mistakes, and I appreciate that. But I thought that this was very well done, and, like, my heart goes out to the people who did consent to sit on camera, because that was obviously very, very difficult for them, for her family, for her friends, and that's not. That's not a slight towards people like Jamie Senegal or Allison Cage.
Oh, no, not at all.
Did not feel up to it. But yeah, like, having seen the effect that it was having on the people who were interviewed, I fully understand thinking, I'm not up to this.
Yeah. I feel like those who participated were able to ensure the legacy that she left behind was handled with grace. If you're someone who's on the fence about watching this particular episode, you know, like we said with the last one that we did together, make sure you're in the right headspace to watch it, because it gets very sad very quick. But it was done very well. For me, you know, we were talking about not watching many of the episodes. For me, ever since I watched, as a former flight attendant, after watching the Plane Ride from Hell episode, I've only watched a handful, because that episode to me from my professional past was very traumatizing. Not that anything to that caliber happened to me, but having worked in aviation and had other situations happen, it makes the series a little difficult for me to watch at times. But for those who are curious about Daphne and Shannon Spurl and her legacy, or if you're unaware, like I was largely unaware, I feel like this episode did a very fair job of presenting her situation and finding people who were willing to talk about it, where it didn't feel sensationalized. It felt like you were sitting with a group of friends or family and having a conversation about what she meant to different people in different stages of her life.
Very much. No, I was impressed, and yeah, I would recommend it with the caveat of know what you're getting yourself into.
Yes. If you into the hour that we've just yapped about a 45 minute episode, I hope that we have thoroughly prepared you. I would say, you know, have a box of tissues ready. Even if you don't think it's going to affect you, you might be surprised at what might affect you. That being said, we're going to wrap up. Kate, what do you have going on? Anything of note? Got a little program that you run on the weekly?
A programming note, yes. This is the part where I would normally say you can find me on Saturday evenings. I co-host Collision Course with John Cena on Post Wrestling, except that on Saturdays is more theoretical than anything.
Saturday's a state of mind.
Yes. Saturday night is all right for fighting. It's just that we don't always do it then. For instance, Collision is airing tomorrow, and John and I will be recording a show that will be available on Friday. Then eventually we're going to get back to doing shows on Saturday. Like it'll be nice. Last week was the first time in 2 years I haven't been on the show, and something went horribly wrong in the last half hour. Half hour didn't air. Like like something went wrong. The last half hour of Collision did not air anywhere.
Stop.
And it seems to have been this huge, I don't know what was going on with Time Warner Discovery, but there seems to have been like just a colossal the screw up. And I think yesterday, finally, they managed to get the full show up on Max or HBO Max, whatever the hell they're calling it now. I don't even know anymore.
I think HBO Max is back again.
Yes, indeed. So, last week's show, thank you very much, Jordan Goodman, for filling in for me. But I guess, yeah, like it was sort of only about half a show or like three quarters of a show that they were reviewing. And then, yeah, this week it's on Thursday. I can't even, the schedule's all over the place. However, this is a very long way of saying you can find me normally on Saturdays, not always on Saturdays, but I'm around reviewing Collision with John Cena every week. Unless right, it's not on.
Or they do like a big, a y'all in or whatever is coming up, or y'all out. I don't know. I don't watch the All Elite Wrestling often. So as for me, I will be doing a show report this Friday about the Hana Kimura Memorial Show. This year's theme is Hanabi, which is fireworks. I'm prepared to fully cry into my coffee. Mm-hmm. Watch starting at 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
this is the week I go through it. This is like mopey Empress week. She's like there's previously like Empress Power week. This is Empress sad girl week. And then that'll end the month of May for me. But the first Friday in June, WH Park Premium Content Park and I will be back with the June installment of Post Pro Res. And Brucifer Lord, our Lord and Savior of New Japan Pro Wrestling, who watches all the things, is currently gallivanting around the United Kingdom with his family. Mm-hmm. But he and I will reunite, June 15th for our review of Dominion, and probably with match picks from Best of the Super Juniors 32. So that being said, I've been Karen Peterson.
I'm Kate from Montreal.
The wonderful Kate from Montreal. And that's all for us. See you later.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Are you looking for legit ways to make extra money? Our friends at The Side Hustle Show have put together this cool free 60-second quiz to help you do just that. All you got to do is go to hustle.show. You can do it right from your phone. Answer a few short multiple choice questions, and it'll recommend a few episodes of the hit Side Hustle Show podcast to start with. You can add your personalized Side Hustle Show playlist to your device, learn what works, and start making more money today. Again, that's at hustle.show, or follow the award-winning Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.